Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Yeah, what's up? It's your boy Joel Ortiz, and I want everybody to make sure that they subscribe and download the podcast, Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. Yo, Tim, I hope all is well. You my guy. I know these interviews are not interviews. They're actually conversations, and I appreciate them all. Yalla.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It is official. All right? Stop playing. Download and subscribe. Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einenkel. It's cold.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's your boy Foul March in the building. I need y'all to make sure you subscribe and download to the podcast Library Rap. Hip-hop interviews with your boy Tim Einenkel. You already know. Mama always said, watch what comes out your mouth. Tight case for the DA from here to down south. Knowledge, wisdom, understanding like King Solomon's wealth. You're a player, but only because you be playing yourself. With all that big Willie talk hot, you're playing yourself. With all that big gun talk bop, you're playing yourself. With all that rah-rah-rah.
My next guest is an MC, producer, photographer, and artist. He's worked with the late great Guru, DJ Premier, DJ Honda, and many more. He dropped his first album, Sunrises in the East, in 1994. He's Jay Rude the Damager, and I want to welcome him to the Library with Tim Einenkel on allhiphop.com. Jay Rude, thank you so much for joining me.
Tim, thank you for having me, bro.
Cool. So you once told the journalist Michael A. Gonzalez, quote, "I used to go to the park with my aunt, and when I heard hip-hop for the first time, I knew that's what I wanted to do. Even when I was a shorty, I had a feeling I was going to be famous." So what was that album or even that track that you remember kind of hearing that spoke to you that said, all right, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to do.
I mean, well, you know, when I was a kid, the first time I seen dudes rap and stuff, but the first thing I really ever really heard that was like significant was Rapper's Delight, right? For me, because it's not like I could go to a party or you know, it was, and then it was stuff like Super Rhymes and Super Rhymes. I used to love Super Rhymes. Like, that was my joint. It was so many records, like, you know, I would hear the tapes of the Treacherous Three and all of that, because my aunt is like 5 years older than me, so
nice.
Her friends were all that age, and some of them were like DJs, a couple of dudes, my man David, they moved from the Bronx to the block, so, you know, they was in the know. They the first ones I ever seen when they pulled out the turntables like that at the block party, and somebody grabbed the mic. I was like, oh, yeah, this is what I want.
But what was happening at that time that you felt that you could obviously make a career out of this, right? I mean, it wasn't just a passion, but it was also maybe a career.
I mean, I was a kid, right? So I wasn't thinking about a career or nothing like that. That's what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? It's like, that's just it. It just was a feeling. It was a feeling. When I was young, I always had a feeling. I know this about myself. I was born to perform. Mm. Whether in any arena, I was born to perform. Whether it would be public speaking somewhere, whether it would be as an attorney, or I knew that I was meant to be in front of people and speak with people because I had that gift. And I still have that gift. I shouldn't say had, but I have that gift.
You mentioned artists that, you know, we've obviously all heard of, like, you know, Treacherous Three, you know, and all those guys, but you know, you're from East New York, and was there an artist, kind of like, you know, how there's a comedian, but was there like a kind of a rapper, an MC that maybe didn't blow up or didn't get on wax, but kind of had an influence on you and kind of helped shape your style, your wordplay?
I mean, really, the thing is, East New York had a lot of dope MCs. They had, like I said, Super Ron, Fat Boy, so many different people. So those are really the people. I mean, it was a couple dudes in my neighborhood who were dope, but I wanted to be like the Fat Boys, you know? Like, Stetsasonic. Like, they all from East New York, you know? That was, they were like, yo, why? You know?
What is it? I see, that's the thing. I mean, what is it about East New York that kind of bred this amazing group of talented people?
It was dangerous. it was dangerous, and you had to have hustle to be able to get out of certain situations and maneuver. It bred maneuverability, let's say. And that's what MCing is, right? It's being able to maneuver, to use your words. That's why it's called rap. Because rapping just means to talk, right? So when we rapping, we talking. And you had to have that slick way about yourself in East New York, because they just slick with those words.
You know, you, the story, obviously, everyone knows, you met DJ Premier and the late Guru in high school. What was the...
I was in high school. Guru was... already 27, something like that, 28. I met Guru through a friend of mine from high school, my man Shad, because his cousin Smitty was rolling with Guru, because it was a lot of different gangstar incarnation, right? Like DJ Premier and Guru weren't the first gangstar. The first gangstar was Big Shug and Guru. And then Big Shug went to jail. And then there was a lot of different other dudes. So I met Guru in that interim, when him and Premier was getting ready to get together. Because my boy Tommy Hill, my man Gus, and my man Little Dot, they used to hang out with Guru all the time when he was on Wild Pitch. And, you know, it was people used to send in, like, a lot of boxes of tapes and stuff. And they was going through the boxes. They used to go to the boxes of tapes because they used to listen to the tapes because they used to want to, if it was whack, they would take the tape and dub over it, right? Because, you know, you had to have your Mr. Magics and all that. So, and on one of the tapes, they heard Premier was on one of the tapes. And they was like, yo, get rid of the MC, but the DJ, man, get him. And that's how that happened.
When you met Guru and Premier, did you sense that they were going to have this kind of long-lasting impact on not just music, but also the culture?
I mean, we were kids, so it wasn't about none of that. It was just about being the dopest. Like, at that time, hip-hop was really young. So it was just about being the dopest, and I just knew that they were dope. And that was it. I just knew that they were dope, and they had dope music, and we was going to do dope things.
In 1994, you dropped your debut album, The Sun Rises in the East, which was produced entirely by Premier. But then you look at 94, and you look at debut albums alone. You have Nas's Illmatic, Ready to Die from Biggie, Outkast, Southern Playalistic, OC's Word Life, Smith & Wesson's A Shining, Big L, you know, to name a few. What is it about this 94 class that just bred, you know, greatness?
Life is dangerous. Once again, life was dangerous, and you had to. This is the thing, and this is the honest truth. See, nowadays, music, life is imitating art. Back then, art was imitating life. We were talking about what we were living. So it was the honesty, and that's what made it great. It was because it was honest. Even if a dude, when I say honest, I'm saying even if a dude wasn't the biggest gangster or whatever, he was hanging out with gangsters and he was hanging in the corner smoking and doing all the stuff that they talking about. And you could feel that. It was fresh. And another thing is, it was about the skill. It all was about the skill. It was about the truest part of being an MC. And the truest part of being an MC is, you can't burn me, I'll burn you. And that's it. That was it. And everybody wanted to burn everybody else, because a lot of people don't know. When Nas did the Illmatic album, I was sitting in the studio for most of the song. It used to be me, him, and Premier, and D&D. Premier would go pick me up. We would go get Nas from Queensbridge. We would go to D&D. I would roll the blunts, and Nas would write the rhymes, and Premier would do the beat. Hmm. It was like that for most of the song. Even though dudes was mad cool with each other, it wasn't a bunch of collaborations and all that, unless it was a special event that somebody outside put you guys together because everybody wanted to be the best. Like, yeah, you my man right now, but when it comes to the record, I'm going to burn you. You see what I'm saying? And that's how it was friendly competition, but it made us all get better because you would hear something, you'd be like, oh man, El said that, or he said that, I got to say something iller than that. And that's what did it.
So was The Sun Rises in the East, were you writing that, or I guess creating that as you were in studio sessions or watching, you know, these?
Nah, I was just smoking weed. I was just smoking weed. That's it. Like everything, like, I don't write rhymes until I get the beats. To this day, that's just what it is. I don't really write rhymes. Like some dudes, they write rhymes all the time. When I was young, I used to write a lot of rhymes. But because you can't make a record if you don't have the beat first. How could that fit together like a puzzle if some of the puzzle pieces are missing?
In 96, let's fast forward a little bit. You dropped Wrath of the Math, and you know, on the album, there's the track One Day, which is a commentary on Puffy and Bad Boy Era. And then you also have, you have Playing Yourself, which is kind of using the same riff as Junior Mafia's Player's Anthem. You first verse is about Biggie. Second verse, I think, is about...
Well, I never had a verse about Biggie on none of my records. Mm-hmm. That's all a misconception. And even with the riff, Premier tell you that. Biggie was my man. Like, real talk, that was my man. And even when the whole thing went, I was mad at Puffy for something that was silly, right? But I was young. I was young from East New York. And it was never anything about Biggie at all. I was just talking about the game and what it was about, like what it was going to turn into. And if you look around, look what we have today. Everything that I was saying has come to pass. But yeah, I was never directing anything to Biggie directly because that was my man. And I'll say this to you, and this is why you know I'm real. I was saying dudes' names. Why I'm gonna say their names and then not say your name? If I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you. Right. That's just it. It was never nothing else. If I wanted to say something, I would say your name.
Why do you think hip hop? I mean, in that year, why do you think the hip hop went in that direction? I mean, the bad boy direction in terms of what do you think it was more because that's what the masses wanted, or because do you think there was other players or other?
Well, the mass is gonna take what you feed them. That's number one in most cases, right? It's like if you ever seen that movie Malcolm X when Elijah Muhammad, he put the dirt in the water. Look, the radio could put out. That's why it's called programming, right? Because they program you. If you hear something 10 times a day, you're going to like it, regardless of what it is. How many songs have you heard the first time you just didn't like it? But then by the 10th time, you're like, this is all right, you know?
Right.
And by the 20th time, it's like, this is my joint. So it was all to me, personally, it was a part of just the progression of the system to take over a powerful tool. Because hip hop was a very powerful tool, right? It was a tool for revolution. It was a tool for self enlightenment, upliftment. But then it became a weapon of mass destruction. Because now it's like the black exploitation era. I like to compare that to hip hop a lot because it's like this. You have Melvin Van Peebles. He came out with the movie, the Sweetback Revenge or whatever. I forget the name of it, Sweetback Battles Revenge, whatever the name of the thing is. It did great. It had a message in it. It had all types of different things in it that was relevant to the black community. Now, once it blew up, nobody wanted to mess with him. He had to pretend like he was making a porno and take the funds to make that move.
Right.
But once it blew up and Hollywood got... They said, wow, this works. You can make money off it. What did they do? They took out the messages. They took out the social commentary. They left the pimps and the whores and all that type stuff. And then you have blaxploitation. And that's what happened to hip-hop. Hip-hop was just blaxploitation part two. And that's what that was. You take out the message. You take out, because even Deucey, and we not gonna act like every song was some raise your fist, Black Power type song. Right. But every song had a, every record had a song like that in it, no matter who you were. Even N.W.A., what they were talking about was revolution. What they were talking about was raising up against the system. And that's what hip-hop was, raising up against the system. You can't have that, because you can't have a bunch of young Black men owning their own records and doing all that stuff unless they just mad ignorant, because then they just going to spend the money. They're not going to put it into the community. They're not going to do the things that you would do with it if you were an oppressed person and you getting out of that situation.
Right.
You know, it's like what happens to most revolutionaries when they turn into politicians. You know?
What about now? I mean, now you have, you know, hip hop is the number one genre, right? You have, you know, Jay-Z, billionaire, you know, and Kanye.
Hip hop is everything. Hip hop changed the whole world.
What about in terms of controlling the content? I mean, it seems like
that's why they took out the important message. Because imagine the same message of hip hop as global as it is today. You would have less oppression. You would have less disrespect for certain people, because those people we would be in power, the ones who created it. You say you have Jay-Z, you have all that, but then again you have Spotify, who pays artists pennies on a dollar for their creation, just like you had the record companies that did the same thing. So people who don't create anything are getting paid off of it. And the people who make it, they get the least amount of benefit from it.
Sure. That's a good point.
So you have one or two, yeah, you got some billionaires and you got some dudes that's making money. I mean, you always gonna have that. It's money out there. It's billions and billions. It's over 7 billion people on the planet Earth. So, of course, we're going to have billionaires. But how is that helping anything? How is that changing anything? It's not, because all dudes talk about, and this is not to I'm not trying to get on nobody, because this is the thing as well that you got to remember, and this is what I didn't realize when I was young. You don't owe anybody anything. Nobody has a responsibility. I'm not going to say, oh, well, this person is a billionaire, so they should be doing that. No, not at all. I'm just saying, just look at the environment that has been bred because of the way hip-hop has been bastardized. And that's what I should say.
I want to turn to, you know, your music and, you know, and of course talk about, you know, your first two albums were produced entirely by Premier. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answers, but then you seem to the third album wasn't, and I think a lot of the fans were.
I produced it because, listen, let me tell you something, who I am. I'm going to always try to learn and expand, and I'm going to take that opportunity every chance I get. You're not always going to hit a home run, but I'm not safe. I'm never safe. I'm always going to do and push the limit, and it has paid off over time, because I have learned, I've grown, I've learned what to do. I put my record out independently myself in 1999. Dudes wasn't doing that. It wasn't even no computers and all that like that. So I learned a lot. You know, things change. People might say, oh, well, it wasn't this or it wasn't that. That's great, but somebody liked it because I got paid and people bought the record and I'm still here.
When you did the third album and you produced it your title yourself, what lessons or kind of what did you learn from working with Premier on these first two albums, not just as a producer, but also as yourself as an MC? I mean, what did you take into those third albums, to the fourth album, to the fifth album?
Just try to make it as dope as possible. That's it. It wasn't no technical skills because we didn't. It was just try to make it as dope as possible. This is what I would do. The first thing I did when I got my record deal, I got 2 1200s. I got a Gemini mixer, some Servo Vega speakers. I got me an MPC 3000 because I was trying to get the MPC 69, but they was like, we don't have that anymore. We got this new thing called the MPC 3000. It's Roger Lynn thing. I got that. I got a bunch of records, and I started learning how to DJ and learning how to produce. And that's what I wanted to do. Because, you know, this is the thing. about everything in life, for me personally. I always want to be able to take care of myself. I always want to be, if the whole industry shut down, if everything shut down, me right now, I could do my own records, I could do my own videos, everything, and be good. And that's what it's all about. It's about being self-sufficient.
And speaking of self-sufficient, you recently did a live stream concert from home. What was that experience like for you as an artist, and kind of how similar was it and different than the actual live show of going to a venue?
Well, it was different because the people weren't here, but other than that, it was the same. And I mean, technology wise is different because I had to learn the technology, right? But like I said, I'm self-sufficient. So, and you know, it's different. If you go live on Instagram or if you go live on some other platform, is different than having the actual music hooked up so that you can hear it like it was at a concert, you know? So the first one I did, it was a little shaky. Yeah, I was a little nervous. But then I did the second one and it was great because I understand the technology now. And it's something that it forced me to grow. I think everything in life that you do should force you to grow.
I mean, my understanding is that the set list was made up entirely of fans' choices.
Yes, because I did too. The first one I did on myself, but this set list I did this time, I just took requests from all the fans.
What was the most requested track? And then what was that track that you wanted people to request but was worried that
the most requested track was Ain't the Devil Happy. It was three tracks that was requested the most. It was... And this crazy thing is probably not the trash you would think. You would probably think, oh, Come Clean, Clean Yourself. No. It was Ain't the Devil Happy, 99.9%, and One Day. Those are the top three requested tracks.
What was the track that you kind of wanted to perform, but maybe was kind of worried that...
Oh, no. Every single song was requested. Every song I ever did was requested. I just couldn't do them all. Like, it was crazy. I had over 350 requests sent to my email. And I'm not even counting the ones that people requested on Instagram. Because if I take it to Instagram, on my posts all together, I probably had over 1,000 comments on the three or four posts that I did. Like, at least 200 to 300 comments on requests every post.
I want to turn to... talk about obviously we're in a pandemic now, and this has not obviously impact everyone in the world, and you know, including of course artists as well. And not just from for artists, not just from the creative side, but also from the business side of things. Obviously we have to, they've canceled concerts or tours and stuff like that. Right. How do you think, what do you think the lessons will be for an artist to take away from this pandemic, not just from a creative side, but also from the business side of things?
You have to be self-sufficient. And you have to realize you have to move into business in such a way where you transfer what you do from a gig-based business into some other type of business where you're making money, where it's not dependent on if you have to show up. You know, I learned that a long time ago from Robert Greene. No, not Robert Greene. What's his other dude's name? Rich Dad, Poor Dad dude. See, I'm giving secrets away. But, excuse me, is that the best kind of income is that residual income, right? You have to create income that's making money even when you're not there. If you break your arm or you can't get out of bed or something like that happens. So, you know, you got to just think of hustles.
The great thing about art is that the general public usually turns to it to escape crisis.
Right.
And I imagine
Hollywood up the Great Depression.
And I imagine what artists do it the same thing. They turn to their own art for therapeutic times as well. So I guess my question to you is, why do you write? Do you write purely just for? Do you write not just be artistic, but also for therapeutic as well?
I love to create. That's just it. Everything I do is about creation. I'm in here waking up. You see, I got my drum machine. I write, I film, I edit, I go, I shoot. But I do this on a daily basis, even when it's not a pandemic. That's what I do. I love to create. You know, that's who I am. I'm a creator.
And one thing you're creating, you're working on your first full-length album in 10 years.
Right.
Why the break between albums?
Touring. I tour a lot. I tour more than most people. Like, a lot of people don't know that, but my tour schedule is constantly busy. If you look, like, man, it was a point I was doing 150, almost 200 shows a year. Mm. You know, it slowed down a little bit. Now I'm up to about, like, 90, 100, something like that. But I'm touring a lot. So, and then, you know, you just got to feel it. I was having fun. I was tossing it up and getting back, you know, smashing and all of that type stuff. Like, you know, living a life of rally. But what? Yeah, so I mean, I actually already finished my album. Like, my album is done. And my man actually is mixing it now. And I actually did, like I said, two of the joints, but 1.5 joints on Tiny Desk, as we spoke about earlier. So, you know, tell people to watch that if they want to see it. And I mean, it's, I think, honestly, and this is very honest, not just from a creative level, but from a sonic level and all that, this is going to be one of my best albums, like, ever. And whoever says it's not is 100% front.
Hey, yo, check this out. This is DJ Evil D, you know what I'm saying? Representing Beat Miners, Black Moon, Rocksteady Crew. Man, Bootcamp, I got a lot of jobs, you know what I'm saying? But that's enough of that, you know what I'm saying? But word up, let me tell y'all something right now. What you need to do is you need to make sure you subscribe and download the podcast Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Einickel. Word up. Yo, you need to make that happen. Word up, you know what I'm saying? Because This is hip hop right here. It's hip hop in podcast form, and it's very informative. Do what you gotta do. Word up. See you, P, and I'm out.
But wanna see you in the ground, steal your crown, lay your woman down. That's right, the same ones you hung around. Yeah, it hurts. I ain't even going school around. Be your fall. Just make sure you get up off that ground.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.